Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
There's an intersection with God that happens in pain and suffering that is palpably different than reading a book or even reading Bible verses when your life is going pretty well. And there is a dark night of the soul, there is an anguish, there is a need for answers and a need for presence of God that you don't find in other times. And turning and facing the hard times instead of avoiding them, I believe, has created the bedrock of my soul. The deep place where when I go through hard times now and I feel like I'm drowning, my feet touch on that rock and I push up from them, and that rock is God, and I know I'm going to be okay.
From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. Roger Marsh here. The Princeton Review continues to name APU as one of the best colleges in the West. It made the 2012 list of best colleges rankings. And if you want to learn more about the educational opportunities awaiting you at Azusa Pacific University, contact us here at homeward.com. As a matter of fact, Dr. Jim Burns, part of the Youth and Family Ministry teaching team. Jim's in the classroom once a week, and there are so many different students. Matter of fact, there's an independent study student who was not by the office not too long ago getting some office hours with Jim. On today's program, part two of a conversation Jim recorded on location with author Nancy Ortberg. We're going to talk about finding God in the most unexpected places. It's a great conversation. Here's part one of today's program right now. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. You know, God is not hiding from us. He is with us all of the time. And we just need to know where to look. We're going to talk about that today, finding God in the most unexpected places. It's a continuing conversation with Nancy Ortberg. She is a gifted author and a communicator who is passionate about helping people find God in their lives, regardless of where they're at and no matter what their experience is. She has been a teaching pastor for many years at Willow Creek Community Church. She is now living in the San Francisco Bay Area with her husband, John Ortberg, who is also, I think, one of the most gifted communicators in the world. And they have three children. She is the co-founder of TeamWorks 2. That's a business and leadership consulting firm based out of California that provides leadership coaching and consulting for many great organizations. Nancy, welcome back to the
program. Thank you, Jim.
Program. Appreciate it so much. You've written a great book called Looking for God, An Unexpected Journey Through Tattoos, Tofu, and Pronouns. It's actually a book that I handed to one of my daughters who, is in college. And it's the kind of book that, wow, she will resonate with it. I don't think she's read it yet because I've just given it to her, but appreciate so much your book and your writing and your message. I want you to tell us about some of the more unexpected places where you found God in your own life.
Well, you know, I think when you open your eyes up, it just becomes a little easier. It's something as simple as a meal. When I sit down and I've read in Scripture to taste and see that the Lord is good, I've read in the Old Testament about all the celebrations and banquets and feasts that they would have. But there are times when I'm mindful and aware, and I sit down in front of a plate of tilapia, which is a lovely fish, and it's got red peppers and avocado on it. And I scratch my head and I think, you know, God didn't have to do all this. He could have just made bread and milk and bananas and fed us nutritionally, but there's something gratuitous in it. There's something completely unnecessary and over the top just to delight the taste buds. And when I eat a meal like that and I appreciate it, the thread for me that goes back of everything that I've read in Scripture that I knew in my head, I now know in my soul, that God is staggeringly good. There was an old hymn that I used to listen to my grandmother sing when I grew up in church with her, and she had a horrible voice. But I would stand next to her and listen to her sing this phrase, "Let thy goodness, like a fetter, bind my wandering soul to thee." And I think my whole life I grew up with fetters that, and I used to train wild horses, so fetters are just something that you use to keep the horse close. It's around their, above their hoof. And my whole life, my fetters to God have been fear of him, afraid I'm disappointing him, obedience. And obedience isn't a bad thing, but it's not the starting point. You don't obey somebody unless you know them. And what if goodness, what if the goodness of God was the fetter that kept me close to him? I have found that to be very powerful.
And you find it powerful in kind of the ordinary.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of times we want to go to the mountaintop or have these amazing religious experiences, and those are fine things to do. But what you're saying is, no, you find him at a meal, you find him in a conversation with somebody, you find him on a walk.
Well, there's such hope in that.
Yeah.
Of course God's on the in the mountaintop experience, and those are amazing experiences, but there is so much time in between those, and they are so rare that I begin to think God only shows up from time to time and in those moments. How amazing and powerful to find out that that same power that's on the mountaintop is also in a meal, in a conversation, in an observation, in a thought, in a song. Yeah.
You talk about God asks us to be salt, but salt isn't really the main thing, is it?
Yeah, and I love that contrast of salt and light. You just don't pay attention to salt unless it's not there. You know, nobody goes to a restaurant and comes back raving about the salt. They just simply notice it if it's not there and they add it. And so I think in Jesus' words, when he says you're salt, part of what he's saying is you will be sprinkled in this world and you will make a difference, the difference which you may not even know until later on. Our son Johnny, when he was a little guy, when we lived in Chicago, had a dare police officer that would come into his third grade class. And for some reason, my son just loved that guy.
Yeah.
And I remember going out of my way to meet him and talk to him. And in the course of the conversation, he said the hardest thing about his job is he knows he's making a difference, but he doesn't directly see it. When he's out busting people for drugs, he sees the problem.
Yeah.
But he's drawn to the DARE work, the DARE police work to keep kids off of drugs, because even though he doesn't see the results right now, he knows he's planting seeds that are going to keep kids away from
it. And actually, that's important for him to know that. And I think sometimes that's important for parents to understand that, because we're doing something for our kids. They may not even remember. They're too young.
You are Johnny Appleseed with your with your kids a lot of the times.
Right.
You are and that's why we need to encourage each other. Yeah. You're planting seeds, the fruit of which you may not see for years.
Yeah.
And then we get discouraged and we think, well, it's not making a difference.
Right.
Oh, it will. But not for years. But,
and we have to do it in different ways. I mean, serving is obviously one way. You wrote about a woman named Sandra who washed the feet of people at a homeless shelter, and then she would get to listen to their stories.
Right.
I may not choose to make that my main job, but for her, she found joy and God in the midst of doing that.
And such satisfaction.
Yeah.
I think there's something, like with gratitude, there's something in serving that links us to God. In Philippians chapter 2, in those first 11 verses that are called the Christ hymn, Jerry Hawthorne from Wheaton College has done a lot of really strong exegetical work in there. And actually, the translation that most of us have in our Bibles say that even though he was God, Jesus took on the form of a servant. And Jerry says by far the better translation that's true to the Greek is because he was God, he took upon the form of a servant.
Hmm.
And that one word that is actually probably a better translation, it changes everything. It's the nature of God to serve.
Yeah.
And when we serve, that's why we get this sense inside of being connected to a cause greater than ourselves. It's because we're reflecting the nature of God.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? You know, sometimes I can be a professional server and just do that because that's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
I don't get the joy of doing that as opposed to when I really do it with the right motives. Too.
And do it in secret when nobody else is watching.
Right.
And I do think as parents, you need to remember, you will not teach your kids servanthood just by serving them. In fact, what you'll do is you'll raise little brats who feel entitled.
Right.
And to get your kids with you in serving opportunities, whether it's tipping well or giving money to a homeless shelter or going to serve somewhere, take them with you and do it in relationship with your kids.
You know, I say that a lot to youth workers because, you know, what we've done in the church is, you know, we have great programs with junior high and high school going out and doing their service projects. And I say, you know what, bring the family together. My best service experience was taking my kids down to Mexico. And I speak enough Spanish where they wanted me to kind of communicate and they were going to do a big program that night and I was going to be the speaker. I said, no. I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be with my two girls and we're going to, you know, do all this crummy, you know, stuff. And you know what? I'm not sounding holier than thou. It was just a lot better experience for me.
And it wasn't crummy stuff, was it?
No, it was beautiful. And it's what we still talk about.
Right.
They make fun of me because we're building this church and, you know, there were these big guys who could carry like, you know, six rocks and their, what do you call those wheelbarrows, and I could carry two. And my girls just thought that was the funniest thing that, you know, weakling dad here. But we did that together and we talked about it. It was so much better than one more time them seeing dad stand up, you know, someplace and, you know, give a talk.
Yeah, and our families and our churches ought to be forces and centers in our communities of staggering generosity, where we just pour out resources, money, time to make a difference in education, in health care, in whatever the issues are.
Well, that's
because
good.
There's a lot of people that won't come to church nowadays. We have to take church to them. We have to live our community in such an authentic way that it ripples out from our churches.
Right. where they are impressed with the fact that we're serving and not asking.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, there has been within the Christian world a view by the outside world that we're not that way. Listen, we're going to take a break. We'll come right back. I want to ask you about the balanced life. I know you're not too big on the balanced life,
and yet a lot of times
the B word, and a lot of times, you know, you hear from church pulpits, you know, we got to live a balanced life. So when we come back, Nancy Ortberg will hear what she has to say about the balanced life. Roger?
Well, it's going to be a good second half of today's edition of the program. And if you're just joining us and you notice the ambiance a little different, Jim was on location recording with Nancy Ortberg, and such strong content, we wanted to bring it to you anyway. So thank you for enduring a little bit of tech issues there. Nancy Ortberg, the author of so many great best-selling books, and today we're talking about finding God in the most unexpected places here on the Homeward broadcast. If you missed any portion of this program, remember we stream audio at homeward.com. It's easy to get a hold of that. Just go to homeward.com, hit the radio broadcast button, up comes the audio. Also, if you'd like to podcast along with us, a lot of people are growing number. Our podcast audience has tripled in recent months because more and more people are discovering it's such a great way to hear the Jim Burns program at your convenience. When you want to listen, go to homeward.com radio broadcast section and then hit the podcast button. It'll take you right to our site on iTunes. You can set up that subscription and listen to Jim Burns free every day. More to come in just a moment.
Well, it's no secret that kids can be pretty self-centered. That's why I always love to hear it when young people start talking like this.
I want to do great things for the Lord.
I want to sing.
I like helping people, like little children or old people.
If you're a parent, you know that you set the pace when it comes to motivating your kids to get involved in kingdom service.
You know, I think it would be really cool to be a missionary.
I want to be a doctor.
I want to be an engineer.
I want to be really rich so I can give lots and lots of money away.
Teach your kids to make themselves available to God. Call to Christ is the call to serve. Then the rest is a matter of helping your kids figure out what they're good at and where they're really not so strong.
I want to start a Christian rock band, but I kind of can't play any instruments. Do you think God can still use me?
Absolutely. Well, if you're a parent and you want to give your kids some direction in this area, you'll want to read my tip sheet called 7 Tips for Helping Your Kids Discover Their Strengths and Weaknesses. When you log on to homeward.com, I'm Jim Burns.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Incredible conversation today. Finding God in the most unexpected places. You may be a person like me who at times say, well, you know what? I am finding God in church and I am finding Him through reading scripture and some of what we would call the spiritual disciplines and even some of the basics. But I also want to say to you that, you know what? We also find God because He is bigger than church. He is bigger than some of those basics. We find Him in some of the most unexpected places, and we are so fortunate to have Nancy Ortberg with us, kind of helping us walk through this today. Gifted author and communicator. I highly recommend her book called Looking for God. Well, Nancy, the time is flying by, but I've got to ask you this, because I know you're not big on the balanced life, and yet a lot of times in a lot of Christian churches you hear sermons on it, you hear youth group things on it, the YMCA is based on the balanced life, but you kind of say, well, that's for some people, but it may not be for everybody.
Well, and I think there's a myth to it. I sat in those same talks. I remember the first time I watched that pie chart being drawn up there, and I trembled and copied it down and had so much hope in my little body when I left. But I remember a number of years ago, John came back from 2 weeks in Ethiopia. Our daughters were very young. We hadn't had our son yet. And when he was debriefing the time with me and the girls were playing on the floor, he said, I met so many Ethiopian mothers who don't know if they can feed their children. And I'm guessing as Christians, those Ethiopian women, their biggest hope for us in America is not that we live a balanced life. Right. I think their hope is that we live an amazingly unbalanced life, passionate about the gospel and throwing ourselves into what God's called us to do. I think the word balance is a very precarious word that puts in your mind a picture of being on a beam where you're wobbly and you're using every muscle in your body to hold yourself still. Now, you tell me how sustainable that is. Mm. I think balance is a myth. And I think Jesus was not a poster boy for balance. He had times when he got so exhausted he had to send the crowds away and fell asleep on boats. Now, I'm not saying we spend ourselves so thin that we never recuperate at all, but I'm not sure chopping my life into equal pie slices, of which, oh boy, God gets to be one right next to my exercise and my time with my children. I don't think that's what we're called to do.
Yeah. And let me push you for a minute, though, because at the same time, Jesus was willing to take a Sabbath because, obviously, he was living within that. So he had rest time.
Right,
and
he
did. And that rejuvenated
Absolutely
him.
Absolutely right.
Don't you think sometimes we try to have balance, but we try to have balance doing so many different things.
That's very true.
That then we become vulnerable to every negative issue because we're just exhausted.
Of course. So Jesus lived a rhythm, but his Sabbath was a day.
Yeah.
You know, and we're looking at our weekends need to be free, our evenings.
Yeah.
You know, what cause keeps you up at night and stirs your soul so much that there's like a fire ignited in you, and you have to spend yourself doing that.
Yeah. You know, we had Kay Warren in here not too long ago, and Kay Warren, Rick Warren's wife, who is a phenomenal person herself. I've known her for years. But, you know, I saw fire in her eyes when she talked about going to Africa. But yet that still doesn't mean that she doesn't not take care of her, you know, her family responsibilities, things like that.
Of course not.
But
it doesn't always parse out into equal divisions.
Right, right.
In fact, it rarely does.
And why are people drawn to that, do you think?
It's black and white. It's easy. You can measure it. You can tell if you're winning.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in it.
Yeah.
I think equilibrium is a better word. You know, do I have an equilibrium in my life for this season? And 6 months from now, I may have to revisit that and change some things.
I'm glad you say that because I think sometimes people would say, well, gosh, if she's saying I don't have to have balance, then I can eat lousy because I love Snicker bars, so that's what I'll eat three times a day or whatever. And then our health isn't good or, you know, other aspects of our relationship.
And that's not about balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where does spiritual discipline come in?
Hmm. Well, spiritual practices is the word I like much better. They're very necessary. But again, and I tease my husband about this all the time, my biggest complaint is that for 2,000 years, the only people that have written on spiritual disciplines are introverted men, of which my husband, and I love him to death, is one of them. And so they gravitate towards these practices that are narrow and introverted. And I have many times of solitude and quiet time and prayer and journaling that are very powerful in my life, but they are only one of many ways in which I live a rhythm of life that renews the life of God in me. And I know I'm living that rhythm of life when I experience a sense of contentment, not all the time, when I experience joy, when I have the wisdom to say, I'm going too fast, I need to cut back, but not cut back so that I live like other people. I'm wired a certain way to run fast and run hard. It's who God made me to be. Will I make mistakes in doing that? Absolutely. I think a spiritual practice of making mistakes is good. When our oldest daughter went off to college, I handed her a journal, and she knows I'm not a big fan of journaling, so she was kind of confused, and I said, babe, this is a mistake journal. She's a firstborn girl. That's all you need to know about her. She's a perfectionist.
Right.
And I said, every night before you go to bed in college, I want you to open it up and write three mistakes you made. And if you're going to make mistakes, honey, make good ones. You know, don't make stupid ones that, you know, are the Christian mistakes where you're really just saying, I didn't really make a mistake, but I'm going to pretend like I did. Write them in the book and then shut the book and put it under your pillow and fall asleep knowing three things. That God still loves you. The world is still spinning on its axis, and tomorrow's another day.
That's a great comment. You have a pretty vulnerable story about a time when your job took you to a woman's home, and it's just a most incredible experience that we all have experienced in one way or another anyway.
Yeah. I was a home health nurse, and I supervised cases. And so I would go out and visit the homes of the patients that our nurses were in there taking care of. And this was in a under-resourced community, and the neighborhood was bad enough that a sane person should have thought twice about getting out of their car and getting into the home. And I pulled up to the house, and it was really the only one on the block that had been tended well. It had a nice little garden in the front. And I opened the chart before I went in, and I had not read it. And it was a Hispanic woman with two little children, a 7-year-old son and a 3-year-old son. And the 7-year-old had adrenal leukodystrophy, which is the disease from the movie Lorenzo's Oil.
Right.
And it basically attacks the child when they're an infant or a toddler, and it robs them over time of their ability to see, speak, respond really in any way. They lose all bodily functions, and then they die. And it was sobering to read it, and I kind of geared myself up for what I was going to see and what questions I would need to ask. And I went into the home. And the 7-year-old was on the couch, and he was in a diaper. He was just skeletal. He was contracted up into a ball. He was well taken care of skin-wise. He was clean. He was being fed through a tube down his nose, but he gave absolutely no indication that he could hear or speak or see at all. And so I sat down with a mom in the kitchen, and it was a very bare-bones house. I was writing some notes in my limited Spanish and her limited English. We were trying to communicate, and I had her open the cupboard to show me the medicine that she was giving him, and when she did, there were like three boxes of powdered macaroni and cheese in there. There was nothing in the house. And so I was pretty moved by the whole experience, and at the very end, I asked her a final question about what kind of support she had community-wise, friends, family, husband. And she got kind of quiet, and she said they had just moved from Mexico, and they didn't have many friends. And I said, well, is your husband able to help much? And she said, well, he's not here. And I said, well, I mean when he comes home from work. And she said, no, he's not here. He left me last week. And I think I was pretty disoriented by that comment. I wasn't quite sure what that meant, and so I asked her a few more questions, and they had gone to the doctor together with their two little boys, and the doctor had given them the final news about their seven-year-old, that he probably had about 6 weeks to live, and this was 1 or 2 weeks before I got there. And then the doctor got very quiet, and he said, your genetic test results have come back on your three-year-old, and he shares the same gene. And those parents found out in the doctor's office that day that in a couple of weeks, they would scoop up that one son off the couch and put him into a coffin, and then a few months later, she would scoop up her three-year-old off the floor, who played on the floor, and put him on the couch and go through the same thing. And it was a sobering and a horrible diagnosis, and she wept, and he left. And she was with nobody. And I walked out of the house, I tousled the head of the little three-year-old playing on the floor, and I got into my car, and I pulled my car around the corner, and I just sat there and sobbed. And then because I tend to be more action-oriented, the crying felt, okay, I'm done with that, and I got a piece of paper out, and with just fury, I began to write. I knew I couldn't change the diagnosis, but I could help. I'm good at getting people rallied around a cause. And I made lists of people that I knew could fix meals and gas cards we could give this woman and babysitting support. And the list just poured out of me. And it was pretty long. And that night I went home. I told my children about it. They were very little. They wanted to help. I told my husband about it. I had the list out in the car. And sometimes when I'm telling this story in a speech, I'll ask people, what do you think is the first thing that I did? Because I think it's important in a situation like that. Where do you start? And inevitably, somebody will call out, you prayed. And I think that's a great answer. It just wasn't my answer. And in some ways, I hope that writing out the list was a form of prayer, but prayer was not where I started. And the very first thing that I did is I did nothing. And I don't mean I did nothing the first day. I mean I never did anything on that list. And I'm not proud of that. But that list rode shotgun with me for weeks, and I was so excited about it. And then a few weeks later, I put newspapers on top of it and maybe out of guilt threw it in the back seat. And one day when I got my car washed, tossed everything out and the list along with it. And I had every good intention that day to help that woman. But good intentions aren't enough. And I sometimes give myself credit for being a really compassionate person because I have intentions. And they are just absolutely nothing without action. And it matters how you live. It matters how you respond and what you do in a situation like that with your life and how much margin you have in your life to make a difference when God brings somebody and intersects them with your life like that.
Now, Nancy, you say that most of your life you have met God most deeply in the middle of hard stuff.
Yeah, I have. There's an intersection with God that happens in pain and suffering that is palpably different than reading a book or even reading Bible verses when your life is going pretty well. And there is a dark night of the soul, there is an anguish, there is a need for answers and a need for presence of God that you don't find in other times. And turning and facing the hard times instead of avoiding them and letting yourself live deeply in those times over time, I believe, has created the bedrock of my soul. The deep place where when I go through hard times now and I feel like I'm drowning, my feet touch on that rock and I push up from them, and that rock is God, and I know I'm going to be okay. But when I do what I would rather do, avoid those times, I rob myself of the very thing that I so desperately need in that moment.
It's a great reminder for all of us, and many of our listeners are going through tough times like that. It's a great reminder. Thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
And that concludes Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with author and speaker Nancy Ortberg here on the Homeward Broadcast, recorded on location, as you can tell. If you missed any part of this broadcast and would like the full-length audio CD, just drop us a line. Write to Homeward, P.O. Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, zip code 92693. Just include a gift of any amount in your correspondence. We'll be happy to send you the CD as our way of thanking you for that gift. Also, if you're looking for a way to find God in more unexpected places in your life, Dr. Jim Burns has written a book called Faith Conversations for Families. This is an opportunity for mom and dad to be more proactive in terms of introducing the concept of the faith conversation. It doesn't have to be the formalized family devotions, but rather you'll see some idea starters, some conversation starters, so that mom and or dad can be more proactive in making that a part of your family routine. For more information on that book, go to homeward.com as well. Now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.